Shalom, shalom, Galperin. Shalom, Rabbi. How are you?
How are you, Ilan?
I'm good. Parashat Va'era.
Yeah, Parashat Va'era. As we continue, you know, we're continuing now the story of that the Jews are in Egypt, and you know they rarely want to get out, and Moses is rarely working hard to be able to, you know, he doesn't care about himself. He's willing to put himself, you know, on the line and telling God, you need to do it. If you don't do it, I don't want to, erase me from your book. You need to get these Jews out of here. They do not belong in here.
Yeah.
And God reveals himself to Moses, employing the four expressions of redemption, which we say on Pesach, you know, Voteti, Vitalti, Vigaalti, Vilakasti.
Yeah.
And he promises to take out the children of Israel from Egypt, deliver them from their enslavement, redeem them, and acquire them as his own chosen people at Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
What happens after that? He says he will then bring them to the land he promised to our patriarchs as their internal heritage. Obviously talking about Israel. Now, Moses and Aaron, his brother, repeatedly come before Pharaoh to demand, and they don't say, let him go. They say, we're demanding in the name of God, let my people go so they may serve me in the wilderness. They're quoting God. And Pharaoh repeatedly refuses. And obviously now, they need to be able to show Pharaoh, do you know who you're messing with? You're not messing with us. You're having issues now with God, and God's going to show you that by what you're doing is not good.
But no, he's stubborn.
Right. God hardened his heart. His heart was hardened. And Aaron's staff turns into a snake and swallows the magic, the magic stick of the Egyptian magicians. And then God says, you know, obviously there's a series of plagues upon the Egyptians. Now the one of the interesting things is that now when Moses came and said, you better let my people go, and he said no, and he threw his stick on the ground, his stick became a snake. The Egyptian magician said, so what, who cares? We can do the same thing. And they did it, they turned into a snake. But Moses did one more thing. His snake, his staff,
ate the other one.
Swallowed all the other ones.
Yeah.
So they weren't so smart. Then, you know, we see that the waters of the Nile, in this week's Torah portion, not all the plagues are played out in this week's Torah portion. It's split up in between two portions. And one of the plagues is blood. The Nile River turned to blood. Why the Nile River? Because the Nile River was the whole source. That was the Egyptians' life.
Yeah.
If they didn't have the Nile River, they had no life.
Same now, by the way.
Right, correct. That is their irrigation.
The source of life. Correct.
And then there were swarms of frogs, and then lice infected all the men and the beasts, and hordes of wild animals that invaded the cities, and the pestilence that killed, you know, the domestic animals, and the painful boils that afflicted the Egyptians, and the fire and ice, which were combined together to descend from the skies as devastating hail. Still, the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, and he would not even let the children of Israel go, as God instructed Moses to tell him. So we see that no matter what God was doing up till now, Pharaoh was saying, I know better, nothing's going to happen to me, I am the ultimate person, so I am not scared of anyone. He wasn't scared, you know, he didn't want to change himself, he didn't want to get involved in this God or, you know, whoever this official person was, because I can take care of myself. You know, sometimes when you're in the car driving, or you're in the office, or, you know, you're just listening to music, sometimes, you know, at those periods of times when you just, your mind is wandering and your thoughts are going, it hits you, and you think and say, is there some area of my life that isn't working, or an area of your life that isn't working, all of a sudden pops up and says, whoa, what's going on? You know, when you're so busy and everything happens, you never thought about it, not for a second. Now that you're in the office and it's quiet, it's late at night, or you're driving home and you're sitting in traffic, you start to think. So what happens when you start to think? You start to get, you know, a little guilty, a little worried, and then you resolve that you want to do better. That sounds, you know, that sounds great. You know, you're so right on the spot. You say, you know what, I can do this. I need to become better. I need to do good.
To improve.
Right. The only problem is that the resolution doesn't materialize into an actual behavior. You say, I want to do something better. But you don't really do it. And the question is, why not? Why is change so difficult? Why, if we decide that we want to do something different, we want to become a better person, we want to make a better resolution, in our minds it's okay, but when we actually have to come down to do it, we can do it. Why? Why is it so difficult? And think about it, maybe we could say it's because, you know, we're geniuses. We try and outsmart ourselves. We try and say, it's fine, life's good, you don't have to worry about it, everything's fine, don't worry about it. So you thought about it, okay, now, next. Let me keep on moving in my life. And if you go and look in the Exodus, which, you know, the whole Exodus saga that was going on in the time of Egypt that they wanted to leave, and Pharaoh's still hardening his heart, is also, if you think about it, deep into it, is a personal narrative that when you feel the dissatisfaction with your personal, if you want to say, you know, status quo, and you can even have this inclination, you want to do a little better. It's easy to feel good about your, you know, introspective honesty. When you are honest inside and you want to be able to feel good about it, you know, that's fine. So now you can, you know, you can sort of pat yourself on the back and say, you know what, I need to change. I need to do something different. But we don't really, if you go and look inside it, when we think about it, we say, okay, I don't want to change. However, we don't really want to change. Because when it comes to a material thing, for us to really make that change, hold on a second. Then we have a little problem.
Yeah.
And I remember once hearing, you know, the Jewish texts, they describe this problem as the Pharaoh syndrome. And if you go and look a little further, the Exodus saga with the Jews seeking, you know, liberty from enslaving Egypt is also a personal narrative. It depicts our continuous struggle for freedom from our own, each person, individual Egypt. Our fears, if you want to say our character, our perceptions of certain things. So, the primary blockage to our liberation is Pharaoh. He had a hardened heart. And the question is, what does it mean to have a hard heart? What does it mean to have a hard heart? What does it mean to have a heavy heart? That you think of something and all of a sudden you change? You know, Pharaoh, in certain periods of time, as we will see, as the parshas go on, and this is our portion, next is our portion, after every plague that came, Pharaoh said, you know what, yeah, stop the plague, I want the Jews to go, I will send them free. And what happens afterwards, when the plague stops, when they come and say, okay, let the Jews go, I was joking, I didn't mean that, what do you think, I'm scared, I'm not going to. So Pharaoh understood that his actions were self-destructive. And not only were they bringing ruin to his country, he was bringing ruin to himself. However, he couldn't finalize change. Even though he thought about, you know what, I need to let them go. But when it came to Tapas, when it came to, come on, do it, then he couldn't have that change. Why? Why couldn't he bring it into materialize it? And one of the reasons is because his heart wouldn't allow his recognition of what he thought in his mind to translate into behavior modification. It wouldn't allow him to bring that one thought that he had into making it an actual reality. He knew what needed to be done. He knew that he had to let the Jews go. But he couldn't, as we see in the business world, he couldn't close the deal. And if you think about it, this is the internal Pharaoh. Stubbornly, you know, disregarding logical reasoning. And this is a self-destructive behavior. Now, people might say, hey, that's not me. What's that got to do with me? So, who is this salvation that comes? It's Moses. Moses is described in the Torah as a man of tradition, a man of total commitment.
Yeah.
He's willing to put his life on the line. And brilliant as he was, I mean, he was a phenomenally smart person, he didn't guide his life by intellect alone. He deeply felt in his heart a super rational relationship with Hashem. And that's what guided his behavior. His mind didn't tell him how he should live his life. His connection that he made, that he had in his neshama, in his soul, between him and God, that's what was guiding his life. So if you think about it, metaphorically, the Moses method is a matter of selfless commitment. You know, it's the greatest relationship, and the greatest relationships that happen are super rational.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, after all, a parent's commitment to a child is purely rational. Should a child's commitment to parent be purely logic-based? No. Why? Because sometimes a father or a mother does for his kid something that is more than natural, something that is supernatural. They'll go out of his way, they'll put their lives on the line for the kid. Is that a natural thing to do? No. It's something that is not guided by his intellect, but it's guided by his neshama, it's guided by his true essence of who he really is. And mobilizing our inner Moses means, you know, for some people it's easier, for some people it's hard, selflessly committing ourselves to our highest image, the vision of God who created us. He gave us that vision in each and every one of us. And if you think about it, the Moses method is a matter of selfless commitment, not logical calculations. You're not thinking, oh well, you know, if I do this, then what's going to happen in 2 weeks, I'm going to look like who knows what. So you know what, I'm not going to do it. That is doing it on logical calculations, which sometimes you have to go beyond. This can't be challenged by Pharaoh syndrome, which prevents the expression of our logical solution. So if you think about it, what is the point? What am I trying to say? Is that the Moses method is a much deeper expression of self, and it's working a total different wavelength than doing it in a logical way.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, what's the bottom line? That sometimes life's richness is rich only when we can step beyond the limitations of the mind, following the soul's lead and expression.
That's a process of an attitude shift.
Correct. But we have to be willing to close the deal. We have to be willing to change. Pharaoh wasn't willing, even though he knew that it was good for him. He wasn't willing to close the deal to let the Jews go.
And that was a process of process of education.
Exactly, and his education, in order for him to understand it, was the only way within those severe templates that he got. And then he would have said, "Oi, I better let them go."
And with all the signs that came before the pledges, God wasn't so harsh with him from the beginning.
Correct, God was nice.
He gave him some signs, and after the signs, he gave the pledges. If I'm not mistaken, every pledge was before the pledge. There was a sign, or a few signs, but he still said no, 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 and
God. If you go and look, God is a father of rachamim, is a father of mercy.
Yeah.
God doesn't want to inflict pain. God doesn't want to do anything like that. There are certain periods of time that God has to be able to show his gevura, his strength, to be able to get the job done. And for Pharaoh, him just, you know, showing him the sign or him speaking nicely to him wasn't going to work. So, you know, bottom line is that in order to be able to, you know, to be able to resolve or to change our behavior, we have to see that it's a part of our commitment to Hashem, to God. See it as an exercise, if you want to say, between our relationship and God.
Yeah.
See it as an expression of our existence. Then the pharaohs in ourselves cannot block us from becoming close to God. Why? Because we are not going on a logical basis. We're not scared to make that change. We're not scared to close the deal. If we're willing to do that, then our connection between us and God supersedes anything. And we obviously then have the blessings that we need in our life, and we have everything that we need. And we are set free. We're not limited to our Pharaoh, which holds us in the exile that we're in now.
Right.
And that's phenomenal. That's something so powerful that, you know, I think that anyone, myself included, to be able to, you know, adapt to our life. And that's what I thought that was very interesting in one of the messages of this week's Torah portion.
Very interesting. What is next week? What are we having next week? Which parasha is next week? After
Va'era. Bo. Go to Pharaoh as I have hardened his heart. The next set of plays are waiting in line for him.
Okay. So we'll talk about it next week.
Yes.
And I assume that Shabbat services is like last week, start at 6 o'clock.
Shabbat starts at 4:51, but we start the evening service at 6 o'clock.
That's great. Yep. So, Rabbi, thank you for your time and knowledge.
Thank you for allowing me to do this. It's beautiful. You know, every time I do this, we talk about it, we talk Torah, we learn new things. I learn new things. Everyone learns. It's beautiful.
Same here.
I love doing it, and hopefully we'll be able to do it for a very long time.
Yeah, and I hope that our listeners enjoy it too and get something from that too. I'm sure they do.
Yes, God willing.
So, Rabbi, thank you again.
No problem.
And we'll have you next week with God's help.
Yep. Shabbat shalom. Be well.
Shabbat shalom to you too. Be well.